innocent with sauerkraut.
Session with Chad, recorded on April 12th, copyright 2011, New Grandview Incorporated, all rights reserved, and we're starting 11.03 a.m. Hawaii time. Greetings, Ion.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Ion.
Hey.
Hey. I got pretty close last time about the triangulation. Can't quite do it yet, though, so I want to keep going.
Good.
Okay. Some of the things I didn't quite understand were how to lay out the waves. I'm just calibrating here. So,
you're fine.
Okay. When I'm laying out my sine and cosine wave, in terms of how high I put it, I know it doesn't matter, but is there just a good rule of thumb, like should the top of the peaks and troughs of the A sine and cosine come up to the level where the A angle is?
Well, not necessarily. See, you're transposing the wave between the two tangents, A, B, and B1, A1. So you would run them straight from A toward the second tangent. They don't have to have any corresponding response to the triangle. Because see, that's a different conversation. That's where you're mixing or validating a false premise of a span of time with the vibrational field, which is in the peaks and troughs of your sine, cosine wavelength. So we could say you could go straight from the tangent AB or at A, beginning at A, and just let it flow ever high it flows. Till you get to the second tangent.
Okay. So the beginning of
No, wait. There's a point here that we don't want you to get lost in. Well, okay. We're going to let you ask. But what we're saying is if in your mind you could plot A, B, and C, pull your second tangent, pull your sine cosine of the value of A on the point of A, and not even have a triangle there, would be perfectly acceptable. And then you could pull your wavelengths and then connect the A C, B, C line segments. So it doesn't confuse. Because, see, you're taking a vibration and putting it in a flat, plane geometry perspective. That's where it gets a little bit tricky.
Okay. But so if I start my A sine wave at the point of where my A angle point is, that's fine?
Yeah. That's perfect. And then go directly to the second tangent.
Okay. So I'm going from left to right to the second tangent.
Good.
And does it matter how high my wavelength is?
Yes, it does. It's as high as the wave pitch is. Because the height has to do with the pitch of the frequency that it repeats. So if it's very, very high, that means you're going to have many, many, many intersecting points. So however high that is, makes no difference. Because what you're trying to find is where the... We're sorry.
Continue. Just finish that.
You're trying to find the intersecting points of where those two individual wavelengths intersect. And those you will want to plot in a flat, linear perspective.
Right. Okay, I guess what I don't get is how to set the height of the waves. Because I have one program that does the wavelengths for me, and I have another program that's my graph paper. So I just want to know, like, if I've done it on a certain scale in the wave program, when I put it and superimpose it over the graph program, I just want to make sure that I've got some kind of a rule of thumb to sort of squeeze the height of the waves.
Oh, but. Ask it a different way, because our response is you shouldn't have to squeeze the height of the wave, you see? It should have a value, a plottable value, is the point. But if you're asking from the squeezation, I don't think that's a word, that you're trying to apply, won't apply, because the repetition of the wave itself, the frequency, the pitch, is what sets the higher lowness of the peak and trough wave anyway, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that should be a given. So whatever value that is of it repeating, the wave repeating, would be that plottable value.
Okay, so when I'm computing my sine wave in my wave program, do I have to set the amplitude to be like 1.4 if that's the value of my A point?
Okay, at the most basic level, the answer to that question is yes. However, that will not apply every single time without failure exception. And you know how that goes when we have that issue. So that means for you to get the visual to picture exactly what you're working with, the answer is yes. But see, the amplitude, when you're able to convert it back to the chord, okay, from a conical perspective, what we're talking about is converting from the radius to degrees, because that will apply. When you convert back to degrees, it works both ways, but because it works both ways, the answer to your question will change later. But it's perfectly fine for you to get what you're getting so you can have a good visual for what you're achieving. And then you will redefine, or more perfectly define, that valuation future. But for this moment, works just great. But it won't work great forever.
Okay. Am I overcomplicating this?
Yes.
Yeah?
But it's okay. It's okay, but that's fine. That's fine, because nobody's hurt. Nobody's hurt, and actually it's very delicious because you're actually getting the perspective. So any shift or change, however nominal or minimal, won't knock you off the horse. You see?
Okay.
We like that. You're fine. Ain't nobody, you're absolutely fine. It's fine. But yes, it is. Yes, it is.
You mean, do you mean I'm getting every, you know, I'm getting a lot of different angles of it? And that's going to help me?
You'll have, well, just like everything with you, you won't have it unless you have an absolute, complete, and total understanding, overlaying of the whole process, period.
Yeah.
See? So, this is not odd. You, people don't think in code, number one.
Yeah.
People don't think in code. Everything you see applies to code. Well, that's not the way it is with everyone. So, for you to, how do you say, overcompensate for your knowing, that's not a, that's a blessing. It's also a curse, but it's a blessing.
Okay. All right. So, last time you said that I set the X, the new X-axis based on the intersections of the negative sine and negative cosine running back from AB. I mean, B1A1.
Yes, okay.
So that still, does that still apply?
Of course.
Okay. The thing that threw me off about that, though, was, again, where to start my negative sine and cosine from?
From the old plotted C value.
Okay. And the old plotted C value. And then, again, it's a matter of how high do I set the waves on that one?
Like, set it as they are. You don't set the peak and trough. Those values are given in the frequency of the wavelength, are they not?
But when I talk about setting it, I'm talking about a zooming level because I've got one program that...
Don't zoom it. Take it literal. Plot it. Make it go back to old calculus where the value is blah, and you plot it by counting over 2 and up 3 and went blah. Boom, 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 boom. Do it, do it, do it. And that's not trigonomics. That is geometry. See, this is where you're taking frequency, plotting frequency in a flat plane, linear plane, because time is nothing else but linear.
Okay.
And a false premise, but it's linear.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
when I'm in my wave plotting program, and I'm doing like sine and then X over the radians, when I'm working on, let's say I'm working on my A sine, okay, and I'm putting in the radian value for that angle, do I precede the sine function with the value of my A, let's say euros to Canadian, to get that amplitude top of the peak? To, okay, there we go. That's what I want to know.
That's right. That's right. And now be very visual with this process, because when we say be very visual, you know what we mean. We're saying give notation to that value, which will serve you, and then if something shifts or requires a tweaking, you'll know exactly where that tweakage would appropriately be placed.
Okay.
You see, but now someone else asking that question would be a very, 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 very different answer.
Okay.
But you get what you're saying. So you know if you do that and then you have to adjust the amplitude or pull a new chord that would affect pitch, you are able to do that. Others would not be able to do that.
Okay, when you say pull a new chord, what's a chord in this scenario?
It would be the AB tangent.
Okay. So
remember?
Yeah.
But you see, because that's the whole point of pitch, is it not?
The tangent is the whole point of pitch?
No. The chord. The chord. Vibration is circular. Geometry is flat.
Yeah. So the circular is represented by the waves in this,
yes,
right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, 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 yes.
Okay. And just one more thing. With the negative sine and negative cosine coming back for those two waves, the multiplier for the amplitude on those, would that be the x value of that currency?
Yes. Because okay. what the point is you originally started with the quandary of I have not an x and a y value. And we mm-hmm. say, yes, you do. Draw a great big square in the middle of your paper, and that's how you plot it. But what you're using the minus sine and cosine of C for is to establish a new x and a new y axis. And the new y-axis, obviously, is your second tangent, B1A1, and you're using the minus sine cosine to set the new x-axis.
Based on their intersection points.
Yes.
On the peaks, right?
Well, or the troughs.
Or, okay.
See, because some may hit, some may not. It depends on any intersection points. And if all of them intersect inside, then you would take and you would connect each of those points. If every point of your minus sine cosine wavelength lands inside the triangle, then make an X on every intersection point and basically draw a line down the center.
Okay, but here's the thing. If I'm starting the sine wave, the negative sine wave at the point where my C value is, that means it's going to go up above the x-axis and down below the x-axis.
Depends.
It depends on what?
It depends on the value of the minus sine cosine wavelength.
No, the sine wave will always start at the x.
Oh, absolutely. But how the frequency or the pitch of that frequency value could be a very, 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 very flat wave. Or could be a very, 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 very rigid way up and way down.
What I'm saying is because the sine is starting on the x-axis and going up and then going down, the troughs are going to be under the x-axis. They're never going to intersect in the triangle.
Not necessarily.
Give me an example of when that would happen.
When you have a minus value. You pull a minus value of a minus, you do a minus sine cosine on a minus value, that wouldn't be the case. They would all start below it.
Okay. So in the case of if my C was a minus value, that would be a case. Okay. I see.
Certainly. Okay. See, do you see how tricky that could be, though? Not knowing that, you could certainly spin yourself into a funk. But because that's the reason we're saying just be literal and convert the shift, then it'll work every time. You may require a tiny bit of dressing, but once you get the whole conceptual view of what you're calculating, then your mind will easily allow you to adjust that as it's necessary. You see, you'll plot your formula that will work every single time.
All right.
And that's no problem. But we're being very specifically vague on purpose so that what we're working with will work for you every time to the point that you can calculate what that difference would be. You get in the middle of a specific value where you have what you call an anomaly, then you can adjust that from there. Just like we did if all the points were inclusive, you would then take the median X value between the peak and trough intersections of minus sine, minus cosine of the value of C.
Okay. All right. Okay, so once I have my new X axis and my new Y axis is my B1A1, what's the next step to plot the A2 point?
Well, if you know what you used, okay, you have A, which is on the AB tangent line segment, and you know what that is.
Right.
You know the value, okay?
I know the value or I know the angle?
Well, you know both. You looked up the value of original A.
Yeah. But are you talking about, I know, which one is useful in A2? Is it the value or the angle?
Just simmer down. You know the value of A because you plotted it. You found the value of A.
Yeah.
Okay, from the vibration, from that vibration, which is set, because that's how sine and cosines work, you now have a future tangent of B1A1. So the intersection from that value of A2 could absolutely be plotted with that information right there by basically pulling the angle. Because remember, A and A2 angle should be the same, should they not?
A and A2 angle should be the same. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Well, if A2 has the same angle as A, and you know what A is, and you know the frequency vibration that's been emitted from the value of known A in a linear progression from a wavelength standpoint, then you have a new X and Y value, then you can plot very simply with a formula to tell you precisely what the value of A2 would be. To the 1,000th of a cent, if you're dealing with pennies.
Okay. So
that was very analytical. What we just said. Now, someone else asking, we may have a different conversation because some people have to see things. You see the formula, because all this conversation for you is only a boot getting to the formula. Because once you get to the formula, then you play with it and play with it and play with it and play with it to get every anomaly or rule regarding how to apply the formulary.
Yep.
You see?
Okay.
That's no problem. So what you're getting is theory that applies to rulings of how you apply. Like we said, sometimes your B value may plot above your A value.
Yep.
Remember? So it would be a... Instead of an AB tangent, it would be a BA tangent. Well, if that occurs, then you have to invert your B1A1 tangent and make it A1B1 tangent.
Yeah.
You see? So now your A2 would be found where your previous B2 value would have been. And it works the same. See, so that way it works, but until you get the benchmark of what you're doing, that's accelerated.
Okay, but hold on. When you say okay, the first tangent is AB, and then the second one's B1A1. Do you mean that the B1A1 tangent is vertically reversed?
It would be. If the B value plots above the A value.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of an ABC triangle, you now have a BAC triangle. And if that is the case, then you must also invert the B1A1 tangent.
Okay, but I mean in the case of the normal case where my A is above B.
Then it's B1A1. It's inverted from your AB line
okay,
segment.
So my little triangle, if my big triangle has A at the top, then B down, and then C down at the right, my B1A1 has my A2 at the top, B2 below, and then C at the bottom right. It's the same.
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
But if your A and B were inverted from your AB tangent beginning, then it would be now instead of AC, that would now be BC line segment. You see?
Yeah.
Because the second tangent would not intersect the AC line segment, it would intersect the BC line segment.
Okay.
So it still works, it's just completely inverted.
Okay, so in the second case where B is above A, I've got this.
Yes.
Top left on the big triangle is B, and then below it is A. Now, in the little triangle, the top one is B and the bottom one is A?
Well, it would be B2, and the little one would be A2.
Okay, but the positioning of B above A is the same as the positioning of B2 above A.
Yeah.
Okay. It seemed to me there was something about a flip going on at the tangent, because the naming of the tangent was B1.
Right. And that doesn't matter when you're dealing in radians, but it makes every difference, as you well know, when you get into degrees. Remember? Because the radius of that circle is the radius. But the degree of how you pull a chord from a circle has everything to do with its outcome. So that's our point, is that it would invert.
Okay.
You see. And that's, and there again, that's graduate level work.
Yeah.
But it's important, because you could by very easily saying it with a little rule in your code, if B is plots greater than C, I'm sorry, if B plots greater than A, then A1B1 becomes B1A1 tangent. Because otherwise you're going to get the wrong answer if you don't put that notion into your plot.
Okay, so on my big triangle, when my A is above B, the tangent is called B1A1.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And then reverse the reverse case.
Correct.
Okay, good.
And the reason that that's very important to get that labeling right, correct, precise, is because what you're plotting is on the new X and Y axis what the present future value of A2 is.
Okay. So when I move to my smaller triangle and my angle of A is the same as – sorry, my value of A2 angle is the same as my value of A angle – I've got that,
except,
but then my
except it's now same vibration, but now it's at a different X and Y value.
Right.
See, so you would now pull, so now from your new place you could go backwards and prove what the present post value is. That's how you check your work.
So that would prove my A value.
Two value, that your answer for A2 is correct.
Wait a minute. My A2 would... No. I didn't understand that. You said...
I know.
My
we
A2
know, but it's recorded. You'll play with that a little bit. And it's all fun. It's all fun because we're going to let you ask, but go ahead.
Did you just say that my A... I could use my little triangle A2 to prove my A?
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you can do that, you know your future A2 value is the correct one.
Yeah, so I can do back checking on it.
Well, and that's what we were talking about before, which you also got by pulling a B4 tangent.
Right. So the thing
is, if you can prove B4, then you certainly know what it is to be.
Yeah. Okay, so my new x-axis, I have that. And I have my A2 angle. Now, out of those, how do I get what my new value of A2 is?
Oh, okay. Well, now you did that, but remember you took the points that intersect.
Yeah.
Either peak or trough.
Mm-hmm.
You count the number of times they intersect between the two tangents, and you get a value for that.
Yep.
If any of those plotted points are found with inside the triangle, you multiply them times themselves.
Yeah.
Then you divide by the number of intersections total.
Yeah.
Then you do the exact same thing for B.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now you have your... a value for A and a value for B.
Yep.
Now, if you're going to use the Maybank value, if you're going to do that, that's fine. You just go to Maybank because they are a day ahead.
Yeah. And for Maybank, can I use an FD? Because I couldn't find a CD value.
They have them.
Okay. Okay.
See,
so
the fund value could vary.
Okay, so CD at Maybank.
Yeah, and the reason that's important is because that's a day already a day ahead.
Yeah, we established that. So I go there, I get my CD value, and then what do I do with that with my
my
new
A? So you take your value. You take your value
of what? A, for example.
A.
Okay.
And you have your value of B.
Mhm.
And so you would put A over B.
Yeah.
And divide it by or into the value, CD value, for the length of spans of time you're speaking about.
Right.
So if it's a one-day demand deposit, fine. If it's a 1 hour, fine. If it's a 1 month, fine, whatever that is. Then that should absolutely be able to plot your new value for A2 if you have a new X and Y value that you've now established.
Okay, so that formula was my new A value divided by my new B value. Those are from the intersection values.
Yep.
And then when I have that, I divide that by the value of, say, a 14-day CD at Maybank.
Correct. But now sometimes, depending on how you've had to invert your formula, because we want your formula to work every single time, it may be divided into the Maybank value. You see, you could get to where you would be in a completely transversed quadrant where instead of dividing into it, it would divide into that amount.
Okay, but that depends on the quadrant, right?
That's right. Okay. But either could potentially apply.
Okay, but for the time being, I've been working with the very simple default case we have of
keeping my A above my
B.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and then once you get that value, once you get that value, then you plot that value on your new y-axis.
Okay, and that's my new A.
That's your new A, yes.
Okay.
Well, or what? That's going to be the future value of A2.
That's the future value of A2. And okay.
Finding relationship of what A is to B.
Now, that value that I just got by dividing my A intersections divided by my B intersections,
mm-hmm.
and then divided by the value of a 14-day CD. That value, where do I start counting that value? From my new X?
Your new X and Y value.
Okay, so it's on the new X-axis. Okay.
Yep. And what you'll find is, and you'll finally, once you get this in your brain, meaning into the logic part of knowing, you'll almost be able to glance at the wave pitches and know if it's going to be very, very close or way, way far off. Like there's going to be a huge price jump or a huge price depreciation. You'll get good at it, and you'll be able to glance. And our example is in the event with Hal Holbrook looking at all of his line segments and circles and lines coming off all over the place, and he had his little dominoes, which were those new tangents. He could, at a glance, place the new tangent, the domino, and just by knowing how those, you know, once you do it a little bit, it's just like doing math in your head. Once you know what 2 times 2 is, you can almost say, okay, well, that's going to be 4. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, I'll put it there. So you'll know how to adjust this to know what its value is.
Okay.
But it's going to take a little bit, and we don't mind you playing with it, because once you get it, it's got.
Okay. So what if
that was an example of how he was standing over the stone, going, well, it looks to me like me and Mr. Walker are going to meet very soon. And he put it down, and that set it. Now, that intersection of bumping into him is set, and he knew.
So that's what I'm doing, is I'm setting the new domino.
Yeah, you're basing that on a nebulous new tangent. But you are then setting the spans or the scales of the false premise of time between those two tangents. So it makes no difference. Each of those bars could be a minute, and each of those bars could be a year.
So basically,
I'm just
programming my own mind for syncing up.
Well, we say there is no time. Time is a false premise. But we never said that you don't have the ability to make time tell.
Yeah.
We just say it's a nebulous, silly experience to learn how to tell time.
Okay. Yeah. So in the case of when my A has no intersections inside the triangle and my B has no intersections inside the triangle, does that mean I have nothing to work with for setting my new...
That's a very good indicator that the price is going to be flat.
Okay.
That's a very good indicator. So if an ear of corn is a dollar and nothing intersects in A and B, you pull your new C x-axis, you'll find that it'll plot at exactly where the A did. So that'll tell you that your future value of an ear of corn should also be a dollar. But that's not, you'll still do the math, because you don't necessarily know that. Because within a wavelength of how you're plotting your other points that you're triangulating, they could have an effect. So just because that's the case doesn't mean, okay, I know it's flat. No. You do the work. Do the program to make sure, because it might be a dollar and a thousandth of a penny.
Okay.
You see. But because that you know, one pip makes a difference when you're on the spot market, does it not?
Yeah.
Well, that's the point. But you got a real good indication that if they got the futures value of pork bellies down 30 points and you've got it coming out as flat, you know right there that something's afoot, that they don't know something, so you're going the opposite way, of course.
Right.
But see, all that applies to theory based on your new knowing.
Right.
See.
Okay. And what's the significance of capturing these intersections within a triangle?
Because that's how triangulation works.
Okay, but normally in triangulation, you're finding one point in the middle. I'm catching all the intersections.
Yeah, you're finding one point in proportion to three other points. That's your tetrad.
No. If I have three intersection points inside the triangle and I have 10 intersection...
Sorry. Then, okay, the divisible, you mean, is there a purpose for it being divisible by its multiplied sum value?
Yes.
Okay. That has to do with the very, okay, it's about the velocity of the pitch. For example, in the oil market, it's way, way up and way, way down and way, way up and way, way down. That means that you're going to have a very violent, tight sine cosine value.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be way up and way down. Whereas something like the price of water is a relatively stable amount. Okay? So it would be a flatter frequency.
Okay.
So the point of that is that if it's a very, 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 very high and low peak intersection, or if the wavelength, the pitch, or the frequency of the wavelength itself is vast, meaning the highs are way high and the lows are way low, you'll have more intersecting points.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's divisible by the number of intersecting points, so it will balance the amount multiplied by, meaning potential connections inside the triangulated quadrant area.
I see. Okay.
So it basically is a temper.
A temper?
A temper. It balances it from a very, very weak frequency where you have, like, you know, just 3 points that intersect between A, B, and B1, A1. Or
yeah,
you have one that has 100 intersecting points.
Okay.
And they certainly could.
Last week when we talked, you mentioned, though, that my AB tangent, to imagine it as across a cone, like an ellipse.
Yes.
Side of an ellipse. So you're bringing the three-dimensional dynamic in with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But you don't have to think about that, because your computer, from radius and degrees, is automatically going to figure that for you. You just have to separate. That's why on your little computer thingy, you have to choose if it's in radians or degrees.
Mm-hmm.
because that's what's going to pull a cord from that angle.
And you said it's fine that I'm working with radians for now?
Well, you start with radians, but then you flip it to degrees. And then that's the way you check your math. Because if it's correct in radians and it's exactly the same in degrees, you know the precise degree that A2 would have the potential to shift, and will plot it linearly exactly what that shift would be.
Oh, so you say, okay, like do the process first with my radians and then go back
and then
try
convert
it again with degrees. And if they're equal, then I've verified.
You know. Well, yeah. look at your math. If it works both ways to Sunday, fuck yeah, it works.
Yeah.
You
okay.
See? Because degree is, radians are great, but radians do not calculate every potential of degree. Whereas in a circular degree, every single angle is inclusive, meaning every single potential is included.
You mean because with degrees I can go into, like, decimal points?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, of course. And also gives you for a potential of an earthquake tearing the hell out of Japan, making it a dead zone, which who knew that was going to affect you being able to pick up a Lexus at your local dealership?
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
With this, in degrees, you'll know exactly what degree it will have an effect.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned the B4 tangent would be, if I had a B, set up the B4, I could validate my A, my main triangle.
Yes.
And I'm interested in that, going that way now to the B4.
Okay. Then you have your original Y, correct?
Yes.
And you have your future Y. Correct,
yeah.
Which is your B1A1. Okay,
yeah.
So now if that's the case, then you can go to the left of your original Y-axis.
Yep.
And pull another tangent parallel to the AB and the B1A1.
Mm-hmm.
And work the exact same formula backwards. See, remember, because now you know how to work A2 back to A. So you certainly should be able to work it back to B4.
Because
the wavelength is consistent.
You say work A2 back to A.
Yep.
What did I do that?
When you check your work. If you multiply 2 times 2 and it equals 4, then you'd say, well, 4 divided by 2 equals 2, and you prove your work.
Okay, so once I've got my A2, you mean run my equations backwards, and
yeah.
I should get back to, they should equal
to
the
A.
Values of my original A, okay.
And so if you're able to do that, then you could pull back an even future value back beyond your original Y. Because that frequency can plot all the way back before time.
Okay, so that same backing out process that I did to get from my A2 to check my A, I would do that from A to my A4.
To B4.
Sorry, B4.
Because it will invert again. Going backward would invert again from your original AB.
Okay.
Anytime you make a move, it has to be opposite. You have to invert the tangent. Forward or back.
The tangent reverts, but what's the nature of that change? How does that affect my values, though, other than the
Oh, main? Easy. Look, okay, remember, did we do the ice cream cone with you?
You started to mention ice cream cone. We didn't go too far.
Okay, if you take an ice cream cone, like the waffle cones,
yeah,
and you look at it sideways, that's a straight line, that's the tangent,
yeah,
and you're coming down to the pinpoint spot.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be your C,
yeah,
if you turn it on its side.
Yep.
And you start pulling a minus sine cosine wavelength from the pinpoint of that snow cone, or you know what I mean, the ice cream cone.
Yep.
Your potential for intersection, you'll always hit the AB line segment because it's getting broader rather than to a pinpoint, precise, accurate point. So to make that top of that cone even broader, that's just going to give you more points to calculate to validate or prove your before aspect within your ratio.
Okay.
See, you won't miss because the angle of C2 and now C4 will be the same.
Right.
The angle, remember
but when I go,
that angle?
But when I go to my bigger triangle to the left,
yes,
A is still going to be above B, right?
It would be, yes.
Yeah, okay. So when you said invert, you didn't mean invert A and B.
No, we mean invert what you call that tangent. You have to keep them straight because you got to know which. That's the reason you have the AB tangent and the B1A1 tangent.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that's significant is so you know where you were and where you're going to. So if you pulled a B4, that would be one between your original, so it would be equal to the B1A1 tangent. So it'd be the B4A4 tangent. See,
yeah.
You would invert it because you crossed a tangent and made a new one, so it'd have to invert. Just like in a helix, you know how it would spin? The same way it does with your tangents.
Okay.
But the values of A, B, and C are still A, B, and C. This is just how you label the new tangents that you pull. And the reason we say that is so you don't get lost in your calculations. Because if you can't identify instantly which tangent you're pulling from, you may find out and prove that the value is, you may just prove where you are rather than what it was or what it will be.
Okay.
Do you see? So it's just a way for you to know which angle you're pulling from to double check. Because one slip, and you're lost, you see. It won't work. You'll find that a dollar's worth 9 million yen, and it's not logical, you see. Rather than it moving 9.000009 up, it would convert it into saying that a dollar's worth 9 million yen, which seems not logical.
Okay. All right, so we've done with currency up to this point, and just for me to get another x-ray on it, what if we were doing, like, horses at the horse racetrack?
Very good. Then, here's how you do that. What you would do is you would pick the value of the horse.
You mean it's
they do that
number?
As odds. Don't they do
oh,
that
the
as odds.
Odds? Yeah.
Well, if those are valid and they're odds that are placed correctly, because remember way back in the day we talked about the frequency of potential. You call that probability?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember you went way deep into that.
Yeah.
And we told you many things about probability.
Mm-hmm.
That's what applies here. You could do the odds. You could do the value of the horses. You could do what they ran another race on the same track, the times that they ran.
Okay, so it's the same thing. Pick three horses, and like you say, each one of them, their odds.
Pick the value, any value. Just use the same base for each one. You see?
Mm-hmm. And then you know, for my A2 value, once I compute it, it would be telling me what the odds of my A2 horse are going to be on that day?
Depending, it won't tell you the odds, it'll tell you what the probability or the outcome of the probability would be.
Okay, so I'd use the present probability today on what the odds of the horse are today, right? That would be my starting point.
Yes.
Yeah. And then when I have my B1A1 tangent and I get my A2 value,
then you'll tell what the future outcome was. See, you're telling the future from the aspect of the past. You're telling the future from the aspect of the past.
But if I'm using the odds of this horse today, so this horse is at the track and it's like, okay, this horse has 11-1 odds today.
Uh-huh.
And then if I compute and da-da-da-da-da, and I end up with this horse has 10-1 odds in 1 week, that's
well, no.
telling me... No, that's not how I do it.
Well, no, no. Well, it wouldn't. You wouldn't want it from that aspect. What you'd want it is you'd be it'd be win, place, or show on the nose. Because if it was a 10-to-1 odds, and all of a sudden your A value was 1-to-1, that means a 50-50 shot of it winning. That's the one to bet on. That's the favorite.
But how does my scale change from being an odds scale to being
it
a...
It doesn't. It's the ratio of 10-to-1 or 1-to-1.
Yeah, but today's ratio is the what its odds are set at, and then the future one is
But the way they calculate the odds are based on past experience.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, yeah.
See, and you want to know what the future experience is from a past referenced ratio. So if you knew that, and you see a horse who was 20-to-1, and all of a sudden is 1-to-1, you're like, that's the horse to bet.
Yeah.
You see? Yeah. And then, so you have your new X and Y value at 1-to-1, but your money's paid out based on 20-to-1 odds. Because they're paying from the old X and Y value of time.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. Okay, good.
Run that on pork bellies, by God, and you'll see something.
Mm-hmm. All right. I've got a personal question about
this. Or what a corn crop would apply.
Right. You know how you told me that I have one angle?
Do.
Does that have anything to do with this triangulation?
Yes.
Yeah?
So, yeah, it's how you linearly convert frequency within a triangulatable position. It eliminates every other possibility that is triangulatable. Okay? It eliminates every other possibility.
You mean
the simple downfall of triangulation.
Are you saying my process is one has one angle?
Certainly. The only angle you're dealing with is A.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're trying to find out. But now what you haven't asked is, can I do the same thing for B? And we say no. You'd have to recirculate your points of A, B, and C.
But you told me last week that if there's intersections in both the peaks and the troughs of...
Yep, there should be. There would be.
That those would be, the top would be my new x-axis and the bottom one would be my where my B is?
Well, from your minus sign, that would be from your minus sign cosine of C.
Right, yeah.
But your A and B won't set an axis. That's just plotting the vibration of how many times it repeats.
Right. So how would I set the, how would I get the B2 value then?
Well, you wouldn't. You would then recycle, you'd hit all clear, and you'd, instead, and you chose A, B, and C, you'd move the values to what you want to know to A.
Okay, yeah.
See, because it doesn't work, because B is a completely different angle. See, and I guess you could use that to prove which horse is going to come in second, but we don't quite get the point of that.
Okay, so if what I want to know is currently my B, and I recycle and start over again, then what I want to know, which was B, is now A. That's a scenario where my my B could be above my A, right?
It would be. Could be, yes.
Could
That's
be.
Correct.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
Well, it depends on those values, but yes. But don't use this formula to figure out B, ever. If you want to know what B is, move, start over, and move that value of B to the A position. Because, see, you're just indiscriminately choosing 3 points.
Yeah.
So, if that was the case, and it was 3 horses that you had an idea that you're working with, you could work the formula 3 times and do win, place, and show for every one of them, couldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Cool. All right.
See, so it's very broad. It's very broad, and it's easy. It's easy, Chad, when you're dealing with something that's a false premise anyway.
Yeah, because there's a lot that makes a lot of things arbitrary, right?
Everything is arbitrary.
Except the vibration.
Except the vibration. That is exactly correct. Because we would say apply this to your life. You are at a vibration. You bump into something that's also the same vibration, you can sleep with it.
Yeah.
And if that vibration changes, then you won't want to sleep with it. Boom. You just solved all relationship problems on the planet. For you.
Yeah.
You want a new car. You have your vibration is blah. The car's vibration is blah. If they're the same vibration, that's your car. It comes to you. Can't help.
Yeah, but how do you
get... It finds you.
If it's not the same vibration, then what? You're just...
Then that's not the choice.
Then that's not the choice. Okay.
Then you could run that vibration from a future value of time and go, okay, in 9 months, 3 days, and 6 hours, I'll no longer have this car.
Right.
And the night before, somebody will come, blow up your car, run into your car, steal your car, blah, 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 blah.
But how do I get how do I measure the frequency of the car?
Oh, very easily. From the angle that you're predisposing from the frequency that you are. Triangulation identifies the things that are inside your triangulatable place.
No, let's just take a car, for example. Take a Maserati. I see a black Maserati. What's the frequency of that?
Oh, okay. Well, that's your desire.